I'm here on the job site with Dale, who's a framing contractor.
Hey, good morning.
Dale traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for all his business vehicles. We're here where he needs us most.
Yep, they sure are.
We make it easy for him to save on all his insurance needs, all in one place, with coverage that fits his business and bottom line. Oh, I shouldn't have looked down.
It's all right.
We're so far up here.
Look at me. Take a deep breath.
No, I'm good. So good.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at Geico.com and see how much you could save. Get more with Geico.
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at Rubrik.com. That's Rubrik.com.
On the Empire Podcast this week, we welcome a man from Uncle, Hugh Grant. But please note that he is not the man from Uncle necessarily, though he is apparently an uncle. We also have this week's movie news, views and reviews on the only movie podcast that is named as a co-respondent in the Miss Piggy Kermit divorce. What can we say? The chemistry was there. Hello, Pod. I'm Helen O'Hara, and welcome to the Empire Podcast. Chris Hewitt is away on a top-secret mission this week. He is infiltrating a heavily guarded Hollywood base to bring you all the news from one of the biggest films currently in production. So once again, you get me hosting, you lucky things, which at least spares us all another introduction about dragons. But fear not, I am joined by two colleagues of such lethal cunning that they have successfully hidden the trail of bodies and not left it pointing right to Empire's door. Well done on that, guys. First up, we have a Hearthstone fan who is never happier than when he negotiates a mulligan phase successfully. It's Ali Plum.
I'd just like to say hello.
Hello.
Also, I'd like to say this is my penultimate podcast. I am leaving Empire.
This is... It's an era of extreme change and upset, and we fear change, Ali.
Everything's wrong.
Yeah.
Next episode will obviously be dedicated entirely to me. It'll be a four-hour special, a bit like 90s TV show This Is Your Life, where, you know, you guys will just talk to me, I'll give you my wisdom, I'll tell you how to edit. It's going to be great.
I'll be honest, we've had a little bit of trouble gathering everyone you've ever met to come in and pay tribute to you. But we're still working on it, Ali. There's still time.
Good luck. Yes.
There will be some people that you've never met and that don't know you from Adam.
Great.
Do you recognise this voice? No.
Hello!
Michael Aspel is unavailable as well. This Is Your Life was only half an hour. It's quite an economical time frame.
Oh, shit.
But remember, there's no crying on podcast.
No.
So
no.
Stay unemotional.
Or in baseball.
Like an automaton.
Well, you heard him there. That was our art house guru, a man who refuses to play any card game unless the rules are at least 300 pages long and written in Serbian. That is Phil de Semlin. Hello.
Dobar dan.
Wow. What was that?
That means good afternoon in Serbian.
Oh, thank you.
I can't pronounce good morning. So you just have to deal with it.
It's close enough.
But thanks.
Excellent. So just to be clear, you still work at Empire?
I'm still here.
Okay, so that's one out of three of us. I mean, that's pretty good going. I have a question this week that was not sent in via the usual channels. This was posed to me by a regular podcast listener at a wedding. So Matthew Jackson, if you're listening, thank you very much. He asked me, and I find this very nearly impossible, which may say more about me than the question, rank the movie Chris's, Pine, Pratt, Evans and Hemsworth. So we have there three Marvel leading men, one other franchise leading man, all called Chris, all totally dreamy. And how do we put them in order?
This is a tough question.
It is a tough question, isn't it? I mean,
very
we don't
tough.
Obviously, you
very.
Know, Matthew didn't actually give me any particular criteria. I mean, if it's on dreaminess, they're obviously all tied for number one. If it's on niceness, it's equally difficult, actually. You know, Pratt and Evans had that amazing Super Bowl bet, for example, that ended up with both of them going to children's hospitals in character, in costume. You know, I've met Chris Hemsworth. He's lovely. We've had Chris Pine on this podcast. He's lovely. I don't know where to start.
Because they did that. The Ghostbusters crew did that recently, didn't they?
They did,
yes. Going to hospital in character.
Yep.
Thank God they didn't do that in the days of Max Schreck. Seriously, Nosferatu. Good news, kids. Nosferatu's arrived. Oh, no. I think that... I went to IMDb Pro.
Okay.
The pros at IMDb Pro.
Wow.
And they've ranked them, helpfully.
Oh, cheat.
Chris Pratt is way out in front.
Really?
He's the 19th proiest person in the business at the
moment.
He's
so hot right now.
He is so hot right now.
He is handsome.
On every level, yeah.
Yes, so he is 19th most star-rated person in the whole of the Hollywood firmament.
And he was Andy Dwyer, which, you know, gets him like a lot of bonus points.
Not just that. You and I, Ali, were just talking about this. He was Scott Hatterberg in Moneyball. Now, I know that's probably not the one he's famous for.
No.
That might be Star-Lord.
Yes.
At this point, or perhaps Jurassic World. But I think he's great in that, as the kid that can really only throw underarm. And Zero Dark Thirty.
Yeah, he was good.
And obviously Andy Dwyer in Parks and Rec.
Yeah.
He's versatile. And he seems to be the guy that every time there's a reboot, his name comes up.
It does,
someone
yeah.
that you want to get in there.
Yeah.
He's my number one at the moment.
Oh, you're number one and IMDb's.
At the moment, he's probably the right answer, but we're ignoring Christopher Mintz-Platt. Or Plass. He could take them all on.
Well, I haven't told you my number two yet.
I would just love to see Christopher Mintz-Platt take on Chris Hemsworth.
It's the grudge match everyone wants, more than the actual film Grudge Match.
That's true. It is.
Mintz-Platt against which one, sorry?
Well, any of them.
All of them.
But particularly Hemsworth. I think the disparity in size would be delightful.
We got a flavour of that, didn't we, in Scott Pilgrim?
We did.
With Chris Evans.
With Chris Evans.
Which was hilarious.
Yes,
and gets him a lot of points.
It does.
He gets a lot of points for Scott Pilgrim. Very few for Push or Fantastic Four in my book.
I like Push.
Yes, but...
And he's one of the best things in the Fantastic Fours.
This is true.
Him and Chiklis do so much heavy lifting in a film that shouldn't require that much heavy lifting.
I feel like we're going to get back to that in a little while.
I agree.
Chiklis had to do a lot of heavy lifting just to stand up in that costume.
He did. That's true. Chris Pine also this week gets bonus points for Wet Hot American Summer, First Day of Camp. And if you haven't seen that yet, and if you have Netflix, I would recommend it because it is very, very funny.
He loses a multitude of points for This Is War. This Means War.
I like what This Means
Oh,
War.
Oh, God, what's happening?
I don't know why, but I really do.
Hey.
I give it 3 stars for this magazine.
143 on the IMDb Pros.
Wow, okay.
So he's the bottom of the Chris's, if you're looking at it purely from a IMDb Pro metrics.
Okay.
And they bear in mind these guys have a laboratory where they work this stuff out.
Wearing white coats, I believe. So who comes second on the pro-ometer?
Well, who do you think? No, sorry, that sounded... Who do you think? I don't know. Do you research?
I would guess Hemsworth.
No, who do you think? Correct.
Because he has Huntsman as well as Avengers. And
yeah,
Thor.
When you've got a Marvel in the bag, you're pretty much sorted, aren't you?
True, true. And Evans has now got DC in the bag.
He does?
Doesn't he?
Does he?
Doesn't he have...
Well, he had double Marvel.
No, I'm thinking... Sorry, I got my Chris's mixed up, which is bad in the context of this debate. Pine has got a DC in the bag.
Oh, yes, because he's Roger, Steve, Jones.
Trevor Johns.
Steve Trevor.
Trevor Slattery in the new Wonder Woman movie.
Tony Slattery.
Yep.
In the Tony Slattery biopic. Wonder Woman.
Yep.
Yes.
The Tony Slattery biopic is called Wonder Woman?
Yes.
I mean, an unusual, unusual choice there. So have we got? We haven't got a definitive answer.
No, we clear that up. I think, as well as we could.
Yeah, I think we've done the best anyone could possibly do.
Chris Cooper. Chris Cooper.
Right, that's
because
number one.
He's done top work with horses in movies.
Uh huh.
Seabiscuit.
Yeah.
And
you made it sound like there was
the
a
horse
movie
whisperer
Biscuit that we should see.
And Biscuit.
Can't forget.
He's done top work with Biscuits as well.
Okay.
And also, I just really like Chris Cooper.
I mean,
he's one of those guys, he's the classic sort of 27-28% or even. Comes
Ooh.
In and, you know, just, he can do stuff. He's gnarly in spy contexts, mm-hmm. such as Bourne, of course. We play Conklin. And he's just a very versatile character actor. But yeah, he's probably not in this bracket of stardom.
I mean, with no disrespect to Chris Cooper, he's not quite as dreamy as the other four.
We're forgetting Christian Bale and, of course, Chris Cross. So just remember, okay?
Chris What's your favourite Chris
they,
Cross?
They would make us jump, well, jump.
Yeah.
Yes.
Who's my favourite between Christian Bale and Chris Cross? Don't put me in that position, Phil. It's not.
Which is your favourite Chris Cross? Is it Chris or Cross?
Well, I think Christian Bale does Cross really well. So I think when it comes to getting Cross, it's probably Christian Bale.
Right, okay. Well, let me put this to you. As a huge fan, of course, of The Big Lebowski, or Le Grand Lebowski, as I like to call it, you have not mentioned Kris Kristofferson.
No, I haven't.
Which has been noted, and it's disappointing.
I think we're leaving out Chris's with a K, aren't we?
Who says?
Oh.
We just put Christopher Mintz-Platt in here.
Yeah.
He's not really a Chris, is he?
Well, if you're... We're getting too deep down the rabbit hole. I think if you're a Christopher, we're going to give you a Chris. And also there's Chris Hewitt of Hostel 2 fame, so can't forget him.
Yeah, so we're thinking, what, him number one, and then Chris Pratt?
Given he'll be giving my career obituary next episode, yes. Chris Hewitt number one.
All right, well, that neatly wraps that one up. So sorry, everyone, and thanks, Matthew, for that question. If you are not attending a social gathering with one of us in the near future, you can, of course, send in your questions via the usual channels. We are on Facebook at Empire Magazine. We are on Twitter, also at Empire Magazine. Please hashtag it Empire Podcast. And we are also, of course, on email. It is podcast@empireonline.com. All right, so on to this week's movie news. Now, can anyone tell me why I have Salt-N-Pepa's song Shoop in my head?
Only if you sing it.
I think that might be a breach of copyright.
That's a good excuse.
Because your singing will be so like the original
so
recording.
Like it.
Just to put it into context, Helen did just sing this in the office and it was very impressive.
Aww,
I didn't know you could do that.
I thought I was pushing it.
Oh, God. Oh. So, because of the Deadpool trailer?
That's right. Let's talk about that just for a minute. Obviously, this is an audio medium and we shouldn't spend too much time on trailers, but there was a Deadpool trailer and it was cool. Am I right?
Yeah, it was slightly different to the Comic-Con one, but it is very, 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 very similar to the one we saw at Comic-Con. The one at Comic-Con had Stan Lee in it. You saw him as a DJ, spoiler alert, in a club. But as that will no doubt come out at some point, and it's also on the internet, please excuse me. Yeah, really, let's say, what is the word? Bloody. Yes,
yes.
Really bloody. It is a red band trailer, and this will be the Marvel movie, made by Fox, that you will hopefully, watch in a cinema with no kids.
True.
You'll go to the cinema, and there won't be any kids around. Though, we mentioned, was it on our Sleep Free podcast, mm-hmm. how when we watched the Deadpool trailer at Comic-Con, did I mention that? There were three kids behind us, all wearing Deadpool t-shirts, and both parents were with them, also wearing Deadpool t-shirts. And I don't think the kids, any of them, were above 10.
Wow. Mm.
Tops 12.
They actually showed it last night before the Fantastic Four screening. And the audience was actually, there was a fair smattering of kids in that audience. And obviously the language is a little bit salty, a little fruity. And so I was a bit like, ooh, goodness, I'm not sure those parents knew what they were in for when they brought them to this.
The language is not only fruity, but there's a bit where he uses one bullet to fire through three people's heads. You can see the blood and brains spewing out. So
there is that. That's true.
Whichever way you cut it. I mean, there's a joke about an avocado having sex with another avocado, which I think is just about okay. But yeah, it's a full-on red band trailer, and here's to the movie sticking to its guns. Pause for laughter.
Yeah, so that was fun. So if you haven't seen that already, check it out. And of course, we have a trailer breakdown on the site, which is actually very, very good. Director Tim Miller talks us through the whole thing and gives away a few little secrets of what we can expect from Deadpool. There was a little bit of Harry Potter-related news today, wasn't there?
Yes, I can see here that it says, get supermodel eyebrows in under 2 minutes, Brooklyn Beckham set for a film career.
No, you're looking up at the page.
Sorry. Colin Farrell on for Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them.
Ah, there we go. That sounds more like it.
Which is the Harry Potter prequel off, spinny off, there was another story all along, American set film. Mm. Incidentally, this is an odd thing, but if you go to iPlay Radio and you're a UK person, you can listen to J.K. Rowling's Desert Island Discs, which is currently on, you know, whatever it's called, catch-up. And you can hear her talk about in the year 2000. It's a very interesting time for her, just before the movies came out, where she was at that point. She tells the stories of how Harry Potter kind of came to be, which was really interesting. So totally a footnote there. But if you are in the UK, do check it out. It's up there, obviously, for a month because of
Excellent.
Good old iPlayer. So have a listen to that. But yes, we have Colin Farrell, our king of brooding...
guilt
and guilt.
Yeah, guilt,
yes,
is his thing, I think.
Off the back of True Detective 2, which obviously everybody loved, not true. Somebody I read on our Facebook page today said, was it just me, or did True Detective 2 feel like Star Wars prequels all over again? Which I think is a bit harsh.
Ouch.
On the Star Wars prequels. So, yes, he has this role. It's not clear who he'll be, but I'd like to see him as a wizard.
Yeah.
Like in full cape and garb. I want there to be somewhere in the Wizarding World of Harry Potter the Colin Farrell wand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That seems like you're making a dirty joke. But I'm just gonna drop. Just
walk
quickly,
past that
quickly
one.
Quickly go just, past just... that one. I think I read somewhere he's playing a character called Graves. Of course, that doesn't really tell us anything. And this is, of course, the 1920s-ish set, New York-based, I think, Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, with Eddie Redmayne in the lead. They are apparently building what may be the biggest set ever built in the UK are at Leavesden at the moment for this.
They're recreating 1920s New York,
they,
I hope.
They basically are. They're basically building Manhattan, as I understand it. So it's going to be a very, very big, I'm hoping for a really, really cool looking film. I'm hoping for Gatsby Meets Potter, which has me so excited I can't even tell you. So yeah, fingers crossed. This I think he can be a really good actor in the right role. So fingers crossed this is that. What else have we got? I've heard rumblings and rumours of a new Bad Boys.
Yes, we've got them here. Yes, 30 Amazing Star Wars Episode 7, The Force Awakens.
Again, location. Just look up a bit higher.
Sony plans two new Bad Boys films.
Rummaged in their big bag of old properties and pulled out Mike Lowry. Will Smith needs to be back.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's not going to work.
That's true.
So that would give Will Smith some bargaining power on this one, and Martin Lawrence too, which would be an unfamiliar sensation for him.
And Michael Bay, I reckon. I don't think he's going to direct it, but I can imagine him going, yeah, you can have this, but check, please.
Yeah. Don't you want the island? No. So the I don't know. I mean, the first one, if you look at the box office, the first one did reasonably okay without a lot of expectation. The second one did a lot better. And in the current climate, you would have imagined they would have gone to make a third one back then. But in those days, they didn't do that so much.
To be honest, they've been trying for a while, though, haven't they?
They have been trying.
Rumours for a long time.
They have been. And yeah, it seems like they've got release dates, so it's happening.
Yeah, the Grey's Joe Carnahan, we're fans of in The Office, has been attached to this for a long time, but things just haven't really worked out. I don't think there was the impetus behind it, but let's just say it. Sony's had a lot of trouble this year. The phrase, you know, no breakout hits is bounding around the internet. And after the lack of success with Pixels, which you'd hope would be a sneaky little saviour, I can just see. Let's just do it.
Yeah.
Ghostbusters is on the way, but there aren't that many big things going on. It used to be the Spider-Man franchise, and obviously that is still ongoing, like working with Marvel, but on the horizon ain't that much.
Well, there's Bond.
There's Bond, but they don't make that as such, but obviously they put the money up for it. Complicated situation. They do have Edgar Wright's latest, Baby Driver. That's coming out on March the 17th, 2017. But these two Bad Boys films are coming out. They've already got dates for February the 17th, 2017, and July the 3rd, 2019. So flags in the ground here. It's happening.
It is happening.
All right. Speaking of happening, that this isn't a link at all, never mind. Resident Evil, I believe, is welcoming back a returning cast member in the shape of Ali Larter.
Thank God.
Is anyone as excited about this as I am?
Never watched one of them.
I've watched all of them, and I'm not very excited, I'll be honest. But that's because...
You've watched all of them.
I've watched all of them. And the last one is one of the most barmy films I've ever seen. Absolutely mental.
This is the White House one.
It finished off. Yeah, it was in an underground Arctic base for most of the film that, in because of holograms, looked like 60 million different places. And now they ended up emerging from that and somehow ending up at the White House and finding the White House under siege from zombie hordes, which are also monster hordes at this point. And some of them are like dragon-y things and monster dog thingies and just monsters, basically. Every bad guy the series has ever had, essentially multiplied by 100, attacking the White House, and you've got all of these kind of sandbag walls around it, and helicopters taking on the dragony things overhead, and huge flamethrowers trying to set fire to all these zombies, and that was basically the closing moments of number 5. So we'll probably start number 6, and it'll be another new Mila Jovovich somewhere on the other side of the world doing something completely different. But that is the kind of craziness that's going on in these films now. And hey, adding old cast members can only make it crazier.
I'm just hoping it ends in a scientific lab somewhere in Wales. I feel that's what the franchise deserves. It seemed to be heading that way.
To a small Welsh town.
Yeah, maybe a Doctor Who actor could be in there. I don't know.
I like where you're going.
All films should end that way now. It'd be contractual. What is your favourite single thing about this franchise?
I mean, honestly, I don't like the franchise particularly. I've just seen it a lot. I guess Mila Jovovich is my favourite thing because I still like her because she's got a lot of lingering goodwill from me for Lilu. But I don't know why I've seen them all. I just have.
Do you think one day Evil will actually just buy the house and just move in and it will officially be the homeowner and then we can have a new franchise?
Freehold Evil.
Love it.
Yeah,
really. You'd like to see a film called Gazumping Evil.
Also good.
Well, maybe that's the plot. Maybe it's just set
property
in the
wrangling.
In the hard world of property.
I think it's Mila Jovovich punching Foxton's employees.
Yeah. I mean, people would watch that.
Yeah, they would.
That could work.
Hey, guess what?
Hey.
Peter Berg and Mark Wahlberg.
Yes.
The Bergs, as they nobody calls them.
They're working together right now, aren't they?
They are working together right now.
On Deepwater Horizon.
They can't stop working together.
Deepwater Horizon, which is the film that J.C. Chandor was going to make about the oil spillage in the Gulf of Mexico. And Peter Berg stepped in and took over that one. And that is happening. And now they're going on to make Patriots Day together, which is another true life inspired drama thriller,
yeah.
I guess. More of a drama, probably, set around the time of the Boston bombings in 2013. And so quite a serious piece of work. But Peter Berg's always kind of had a bit of that, hasn't he? He's done bigger, splashy things, but he's also done The Kingdom and things that are very plugged into the world.
Well, yeah, the original Friday Night Lights film.
Friday Night Lights,
and even
Lone Survivor. Yeah, so he's an interesting guy because he kind of spans, almost heads towards Michael Bay terrain with things like Battleship, and then he's also clearly a man that's engaged in the world in a way that perhaps Michael Bay isn't.
From Battleship, the Battleship Potemkin.
That's very good.
No, it's not.
Peter Berg's Battleship Potemkin. With Mark Wahlberg.
My God,
the
I watched that. I've watched that so many times.
Yeah, I mean, this is an interesting one. I mean, I'll be honest, I was on Deepwater Horizon recently, and they were talking quite a lot about respecting the people who actually died in that disaster. And I imagine that they will be very careful here again to kind of tread that line and pay proper tribute to the real people who lost their lives in the Marathon bombing. So it's going to be an interesting one.
Challenging, and I think maybe Oliver Stone had this issue with the World Trade Center movie. If you come in too close to the events, there's a danger that it becomes overly respectful. Mm-hmm. Not that you wouldn't want to obviously respect the victims of such a terrible tragedy, but at the same time, you need a bit of, you know, bit of oomph and a bit of heft as well. You can't be too sort of delicate with it.
Yeah, tiptoeing.
Yeah, you can't tiptoe around things. So, but I mean, I don't know. This is a film that seems to have been, obviously can't have been because it's not that long ago, but it seems to have been around, buzzing in the ether for a while now.
Yeah.
The idea that they made this film. It just feels a bit soon, I have to say. I mean, we haven't seen a film about the 7/7 bombings in London that actually tackles the day yet, I don't think. So things that sort of talk around it. So it's a tough one for a filmmaker really to know how to handle that. But yeah, it'd be interesting to see what he does with it.
And then finally, they keep coming up despite my best efforts. Dragons again. Dungeons and Dragons.
Don't fear the dragon.
I feel like
chat.
we have to touch on this because it's coming back to the big screen. It's really, I mean, it was barely on the big screen because the last few films have been so bad that at least two of them went straight to video. But Dungeons and Dragons, a new movie.
Wow.
I just hope it has another character called Farmer. In the original Dungeons and Dragons, it had Jason Statham as a character called Farmer, and it's very bad. But this is a property that I guess makes sense. Like, I understand it's got some name recognition. Dungeons and Dragons, it's, you know, a Ron Seale title, right? I think I can just about work out that what genre this film might be in, what I can expect. But it doesn't have the greatest pedigree cinematically.
That is an understatement.
But obviously, you know, it's worth, wait for it, another roll of the dice.
Oh,
okay?
Yeah.
You guys?
Wow.
Yep.
Do you see why I'm leaving, guys?
What did you say?
That was a thing that just happened. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
Just don't just pretend you didn't hear, Phil. Just keep just
minus
keep
one charisma.
I mean, I would say this is a franchise that so far is worse than Resident Evil by quite some distance. So, like, you know, it would be hard to do a lot worse by Dungeons and Dragons than they already have. So in that sense, this is good news.
Yes.
On the balance of probabilities, it will be a better film than we have previously seen, bearing the title Dungeons and Dragons.
Yeah, remake the films that are bad.
Yeah. Will it be up to the standards of the 1980s cartoon where a bunch of kids on a fairground ride ended up in a fantasy land and I was totally addicted and had to go up and watch it every single week? I don't know.
Who can say? You loved that, didn't you?
I did love that, yeah.
You did love that.
I've got a couple of things that I'd also like to mention.
Yeah,
we've talked
do.
About, this kind of brings in two ideas of a movie like World War Z, which I alluded to earlier, which has an ending which is relatively small, and then bringing out old franchises like Bad Boys because you just want to keep that train going. Mission Impossible Rogue Nation, the fifth Mission Impossible movie, made
money.
A lot of money.
Dollar bills, yo.
It made the money, especially in the US, which hauled in $56 million, which proves I don't know whether it proves that Tom Cruise can still pull in big money. He can always pull in money, but this, combined with the franchise of Mission Impossible, is obviously enough. And the critical praise that was heaped upon it, I think it's 93% on Rotten Tomatoes. So, confidently the best in the series. We talked about it last week. Making a lot of cash. Unfortunately, the Vacation reboot, starring Ed Helms, did not go anywhere good, making barely any cash. But there you have it. Tom Cruise still going strong, and you know what we were saying last week about there being a sequel already planned, already trying to make it.
Yeah.
Brilliant. I also like any story where a movie makes a tactical decision to move things earlier, reshoots, gets stuff sorted, you know, gets its head down, and it works. Because so often you hear, oh, reshoots, what does that mean? Oh, moving the date, what does that mean? You know what? As Goldman says, nobody knows anything.
Yeah.
So it worked. It was great. I saw it on Monday. Would very much recommend it. And here's to another movie.
Here's to another movie.
And amen to that.
Well, another, any movie.
Here's to movies.
Just movies.
Guys, there's one thing I want to say. Films, good.
Good decision, I think. I might have probably half killed Christopher McQuarrie, but they're moving it into a very quiet
summer.
Very, very quiet. Where time.
Right.
Yes. Away from very, very busy end of the year.
Yes.
And I think that's paying dividends for them.
100%.
You're a massive UFC fan, aren't you, Phil?
I love UFC.
You're a really big fan.
I love all aliens.
Of Woundy Wadda Wowsy. Wowsy? Couchdad. Wowdy, Wowdy Wonza.
Wowsy season. Ronda Rousey.
Ronda Rousey is probably safest not to mispronounce her name in case she comes in here and beats us all to a pulp.
Randy. Rowdy. Ronda Rousey. Everyone's favourite Fast and the Furious 7 actress. She was also in Entourage. But she is the notoriously kick-ass, commas, badass UFC fighter who is intimidating, to say the least. But she is going to star in her own biopic.
Yes.
So this is a lot like Howard Stern, if you remember that film.
Which was a good film.
Good film. It certainly did something. This will be her life story. She's 28 and she wrote the book with her elder sister and her autobiography, her memoirs. And now the memoirs are becoming a film. There was a fight, not a physical one, over the rights. And we're going to have Dawn of the Planet Apes, Mark Bomback, adapting the book My Fight, Your Fight. And she will star in it. I kind of love everything about this. Recently, she was in a fight where she knocked out her opponent in 34 seconds, which annoyingly beat my record by 8 hours.
I mean, her roles so far have not had to demonstrate a huge acting range. She has not been called upon to do so. So it's hard to say, you know, how far that range goes. And you know, from the little I know of her backstory, there is some real sort of drama and some real tragedy there. So I hope that will be something she can you know, honestly express and clearly express on screen. But she is a, you know, fascinating figure and a really, really tough lady. So you wouldn't bet against her. I mean, you'd be a fool.
I hope she gets into character. I hope she can really, like, channel down and do the research required.
Fingers crossed. Hugh Grant is back this month in Guy Ritchie's The Man from U.N.C.L.E., where he plays Waverly. And we could tell you more about his character, but we'd have to kill you. So I went along recently to ask him about his role and his career to date, and his uncle, who was an actual spy. So I have literally run here from Warner Brothers, having just seen The Man from U.N.C.L.E., which was tremendous fun. It's a little bit difficult to talk about your role because you kind of come in quite late into the film. So what can you tell us?
Yeah, I pop up mysteriously once or twice and you think, who is this guy?
and why does he look like Hugh Grant?
Yes. And then it gradually becomes clear that I'm a British spy, mm-hmm. and I'm after the same thing that the Russian spy and the American spy are after. And that, in fact, I've kind of outwitted them and am running them. And that is the genesis of the U.N.C.L.E. team.
Yeah.
So the whole film is like a prequel to itself.
It is a bit, isn't it? I mean, you basically, in that sense, are the hero and get to order the ostensible heroes of the film about.
All right, let's go with that.
So were you a fan of the original series?
Well, yeah, I am old enough to have watched it. Right. And I think I did like it. I mean, I was going through my old toy box at my dad's house mm-hmm. the other day, looking for toys for my kids, and there is A Man from U.N.C.L.E. car.
Oh, really?
You press the top and Ilya Kuryakin and Napoleon Solo pop out of the side, fire their guns.
Oh, that sounds awesome, actually.
Yeah, it's great.
I was wondering about that because I wasn't sure you know, were you old enough? Because my mum was a huge fan, but you're a good bit younger than she is, so I wasn't going to presume anything. But it was kind of interesting because she had a clear favourite, and I think a lot of people, she says, have had a very clear favourite between Solo and Kuryakin. For you, was it more about the gadgets?
It was less about the sex for me as a young 8-year-old boy, I think, than about the gadgets, yes.
So how did Guy pitch this to you? Was it, hey, we're going to go to Rome, come along for a jolly?
I've always loved his things. He's so unusual for a British film director in that he's so sort of pyrotechnic. And I vaguely know him. I've met him at parties. His father, oddly enough, was a great friend of my father's in the army. And my father once had to pull his father out of a porthole that he'd got stuck in on a troop ship.
Do you know this? Why he was in the porthole?
Well, he was quite a character, I think, John Ritchie, his dad, or I say was, is he still alive? I think for a stunt, he was trying to get through a porthole naked. But I may be getting all this wrong. Anyway, they were buddies in the army. And funnily enough, my dad gave me a picture during shooting of him and Guy Ritchie's father and another officer all standing there in their khaki shorts, like something out of It Ain't Half Hot, Mum, in Malaya in the 1950s. And weirdly, that third army officer, his grandson, was also working on this film.
Wow.
So Guy was so excited by this. We then recreated the picture in original costumes with him, me, and this young guy who was a production runner or something. And we got the costume designer to do the whole thing. At one point, Guy seemed more interested in this recreation than the film.
That's awesome. So it makes it a real family affair in some ways.
Yeah.
Some strange
yeah,
way.
Yeah.
You mentioned, I'm sorry, you're going to get asked this a lot because it's in the production notes, that you think your uncle was a spy.
Yeah, we're never really allowed to admit it. But he was just officially in the Navy. He had some strange postings like Washington for a man in the Navy. And he was a spy. And I used a little bit of him and his type in Waverley. There's a sort of British brand of espionage, which is quite insouciant and sort of easy. You'd never know. They're just normal guys. Whereas I think that the CIA version and the KGB version is more professional up front.
It seems like we suddenly have quite a lot of Cold War dramas again, because they sort of died when the wall came down for a good, more than a decade and a half, 2 decades maybe. And suddenly they're kind of in the resurgence again.
Well, there's a great romance to all that. I sort of miss it. which is weird, because in many ways it was terrifying, particularly the threat of imminent extinction through nuclear holocaust. But it may come back.
Well, fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed.
But it is interesting because it seems like spying has become, you know, it's very political at the moment. It's very talked about at the moment. And yet we're still fascinated with the kind of the old school romance of spying and the old school kind of methods that went on.
It's clearly more romantic to be a spy who had to actually take Minox photographs of things than some nerd sitting in front of a computer doing a bit of wizardry.
Yes. Yeah. And hacking into a million people at a time instead of...
Yes, you know. All of us.
Waverley, obviously, is the only other major character in this film that was in the original series. So did you go back and watch it? Were there things you wanted to pick up, or are you very much, I take it from the script?
Well, I did rent the old series and had a look at it, but, I mean, it's so far away from all this, apart from the central concept, which remains a great one, you know, that you get KGB spy and a CIA spy together, masterminded by a British spy, to do various deeds. That's great. But I mean, after that, it's a million miles away. And so it was a sort of reinvention.
Yeah. It feels like it might have a space this summer just because we're kind of inundated with fantasy films and superheroes and sci-fi and suddenly there's spies, which is...
Well, it'll be interesting to see if all those young kids who like the 3D stuff would also appreciate something a little more analogue.
Quite literally analog in that there are tapes.
Yeah, yeah.
I love the film's vision of a computer disc is absolutely.
Yes, I agree.
So what else have you got planned? Have you made a plan for once you finish Florence? Or are you...
Well, I've now just finished Florence.
Okay.
And I'm having a little holiday. I've got a couple of quite interesting scripts on my desk, but I don't know if I'll do them or not.
Do you feel like now, like the pressure's off, like you're in, you know, the stage of your career where you can pick and choose?
Well, I never felt any pressure. That's the honest truth. I probably should have done. But I've always thought, as soon as I finish the film, I don't think I'll do any more. And then something comes along that tickles your interest.
Yeah. But, I mean, Are you interested in stage or TV? Because, you know, you'll see a lot of actors nowadays sort of being lured away from the big screen to something else.
It turns out that I haven't really been following this. The film industry has changed dramatically. And the films that the studios make are only these big digital video game type things. And that anyone who wants to make the sort of films that I used to make, they have to be made for television or video on demand now. And I slightly regret that because I've always liked the romance of film, something magical and special. And you sit in a cinema and a projector starts, celluloid runs through a projector, and it had romance. I struggle slightly with the lack of romance.
Mm. Do you think there's a way to bring it back?
Well, I don't know. I think it's conceivable that the world could start to feel digital ennui, not just in terms of these big digital video game films, but just generally an exhaustion with your bloody telephone coming at you all the time. I think it's just possible that might happen. Or maybe I just sound like an old bastard. But I'm told all these people who used to make films where people talk to each other are quite happy to make them for television or, you know, cable or video on demand now. They're not queenie about it. I'm fractionally queenie because I just used to love big screens, big cinemas, hundreds, thousands of people watching a film together.
Do you have sort of ambitions of people to work with? Do you have like a dance card you still want to fill?
No, I still think that I should buckle down and write and direct a film. I think I would enjoy it. I feel reinvigorated, especially by just working with Stephen Frears. He loves film so much, and he's so interesting about the filmmakers he loves, the Nick Rogues and the Powell and Pressburgers and all that. And it sort of got me interested again, and just at a time, of course, when that kind of filmmaking is dead.
But there is something to that, I think, with the great directors have such passion and such fascination with everything, not just film, but like everything around film, all the stories that they tell, that it seems to kind of rub off.
Well, I think that's true, but they, above all, what the great, if I had to pick a common characteristic of the great directors that I've come across, Polanski and Ken Russell and Stephen Frears and Guy Ritchie, they appreciate what film can do that no other medium can do. Otherwise, there's no point in making it as a film. If it's just going to be blown up television or filmed theatre or a dramatised novel, forget it. But what they know about is the unique thing that a really big image and can do with the right soundtrack, the right mix, and the right mix of elements of music, sound, picture. There is a kind of sorcery there.
Listen, I'm running out of time, but I should ask before I go. I mean, obviously, you find that awesome sounding toy from the old Man from U.N.C.L.E. Do you look forward to being an action figure in the future if this does become a franchise?
That's really why I did the film. Yeah.
Yeah. Have you been an action figure before, actually?
No, and I'm very bitter about it.
That's an outrage.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I'm sorry to end on a down note.
Yeah.
Hugh Grant, thank you very, very much.
All right. Well, thank you.
Yeah, very nice man there, as you would expect. He's basically a lot like Hugh Grant on screen.
Yeah, we had him in before for that film, which was unfortunately
the rewrite.
Yeah, not the best. But he's a lovely man.
Mm.
Has a sore back.
Yes, seemed to be better. He didn't complain this time, so fingers crossed. Reviews time now, and we begin with a film that's been clobbered with worrying gossip and tittle-tattle for months now. It's Josh Trank's new take on The Fantastic Four, starring Miles Teller, Kate Mara, Michael B. Jordan and Jamie Bell, with Toby Kebbell as their friend-turned-doom. Ali, you wrote the review. What did we make of this?
Well, yes, just to give this movie a little bit of setup, if you remember the 2005 and 2008 very colourful, bright and spangly original movies, which were very good, I think it's fair to say, but did serve the purpose of making young kids happy, this movie isn't looking to do that. It's taking the colourful, bright, Stan Lee original superhero team world of Mr. Fantastic, who can stretch, and the Invisible Woman, who can, guess what, go invisible and also project force fields and kind of levitate with that power. The Thing, Ben Grimm, who is a massive rock monster. Let's be honest, he is a massive rock monster.
Yeah.
Super strength. You kind of know this story. Johnny Storm, you know, he can fly. He's also covered in flames when he wants to. Can shoot balls of fire. Great cast. Miles Teller playing. This is in order of what I said. Miles Teller, Kate Mara, Jamie Bell, and Michael B. Jordan. Great cast. We've got a great director here in the form of Josh Trank, who produced Chronicle, made Chronicle, which was a really great movie that dealt with superhero powers, and people love that.
Yeah.
All seems good. Simon Kinberg's producing, also co-writing, also good. From the studio that brought you X-Men Days of Future Past comes a very gritty, very dour, quite dull attempt to rejig, I think, the most bright and cuddly group of superheroes that I can think of.
Yeah. Certainly in terms of major superheroes. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, of course. Yeah, sure. There are, you know, Bonnie Wabbit's Three Friends, I'm sure, would probably beat it. But
Power Pack, even cuddlier.
Even cuddlier. This tries to gritify or Nolanize or whatever cliche you want to use, and I certainly do, that team of how they get given these powers, this time through an interdimensional jump. They go to another dimension, and on that dimension there is some green lava. And guess what they do? They only bloody go and walk towards the spooky green lava. And
why?
The spooky green lava, it actually gives them superpowers. So they come back from the interdimensional jump and they have superpowers. But this plays off the idea of, you know what, if you actually woke up and you were on fire, this would be really scary. And if you were suddenly made of rock, this would be appalling. And they touched on that, touched, gently grazed on that in the 2005-2008 movies. But not really. This tries to do something with it, but unfortunately it's very muddled, and it has a lot of the movie filled full of scientific montages because they have to make this dimensional jump equipment.
Yeah.
Where Kate Mara, you'll see her two or three times at a computer typing, and they try to make that cinematic. Type, 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 look at a screen, type, 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 look at a screen.
Hey, somebody welds at one point, okay? There's welding.
Someone welds, and then that person welding asks the other person, hey, have you welded before? And that person says, yes.
Oh, it's amazing.
This movie also has dialogue, which is very much what is happening and what needs to happen next. It's not exactly like this, but it's a bit, hey, we need to open that door. Okay, you open the door. It's a bit like that. Also, and I want to make this point, even though it might reveal a bit too much of the film, might give a bit too much away, the reason why they go to the interdimensional jump, these scientists, the first time, is because they get drunk. And what do they get drunk on? The smallest hip flask I've ever seen.
In fairness, there is a line about we need another refill of this. So they've had a couple of refills, one hopes, because you're right, it is the tiniest flask ever. Also, it slightly annoyed me, and this will be predictable to anyone who's ever heard me speak, Kate doesn't go. Sue Storm does not go. Because she's not allowed to hang out with the guys when they're drinking and bonding.
She's too sensible.
She's off somewhere. She's literally off somewhere being a goody two shoes, which she continues to be throughout the film. It's a real mess, this. You do not see them together, powered up, the lineup of the four, for 90 minutes.
The movie is 100 minutes long.
I mean, seriously.
This film is called The Fantastic Four. It is not The Fantastic Four. If that could be the soundbite, if that's the bit that you take out of it, great. Because you, as you say, don't see the Fantastic Four. It's only at the very end that you can vaguely say they're the Fantastic Four. It also tries to have its cake and eat it. It tries to be gritty and different and dark and make this a more grounded, actually, what if? It's to be admired. But at the same time, come the end with Doctor Doom, who of course turns up and is evil and bad and wears a cape, it's boom and pow and smash and zam and all the stuff that you thought this movie wasn't going to do. So much so, in fact, that those lines from the comics, it's clobbering time, get clobbered in. It's just really,
yeah.
No, you're not. You wouldn't dare.
Oh, God, you did.
Oh, God, you did. This is a movie that doesn't have a Stan Lee cameo. When I heard that, great, because this is pitching itself as the kind of movie that wouldn't have one. Though this is like very much his baby, he's not in it because it wouldn't fit. How would you crowbar him? Would he be one of the guys sweeping the back of the scientific lab? Who knows? And yet, they sneak in. It's clobbering time.
Yeah, I had major, major problems by the third. I even had problems with the opening. At the opening, we see Ben Grimm and Reed Richards get together when they're about 10. And it does not add anything. You could cut off easily 10 minutes of that and give it to the end of the film, which is incredibly truncated and benefit hugely. Doom is the worst designed major character I have seen in I don't know how long. It reminded me of X-Men Origins Wolverine, the bad guy at the end of that. It was a horrendous, horrendous design. Whoever signed off on that version, ugh. I did not like him at all. The other thing is, at the very end, when they have this big final confrontation, vital exposition is being shouted against a whirlwind type thing. I had no clue what the heck they were saying for quite some time. I had to figure it out from the graphics.
This film is all exposition and very, very little payoff. In the review, trying to write it, I tried my level best to think of all the stuff that is good in it. And I think it was important to do that because this isn't a the camera fell over disaster.
No.
It's just, bluntly, not very good, or rather, not good enough.
Yeah.
You know, points for trying. So it's kind of like C for effort, but the execution just fails.
Also, I just want to say, and this might be a tiny spoiler, the very last moment of the film, and there is no post-credits thing in this one, but the very last moment of the film is virtually identical to the ending of another major blockbuster this summer.
It's embarrassing.
In the last 2.5 months, somebody should have looked at that and re-edited. There has got to have been a better way to finish the film than an identical one to a bigger movie this year. And I think that's a real... That's an example of just the way that they just kind of...
It'll do.
They just threw it up there. So, yeah.
It had a troubled production, or so the rumours say, and it certainly comes across as messy. There are timeline jumps. There are characters that just get forgotten about and then come back in. Johnny Storm doesn't turn up until about 25 minutes into the movie. It is a shame, and I would not recommend this film. But at the same time, I don't really want to go absolutely bananas on it in the way I did, say, for Prometheus. But still, unfortunately, two stars is not a recommendation.
I think if you go in with low expectations, you may be pleasantly surprised. Certainly good performances. I didn't have a problem. Very, very good cast. But yeah, 2 stars feels about right for me. All right, so next up is a film that's nearly a perfect opposite. Royal Night Out's Belle Powley, she played Princess Margaret there. She is living the dream this time. She's seducing Alexander Skarsgård. The only problem is she's playing a 15-year-old and he's her mum's boyfriend. So,
living the dream.
Phil, what did you think of this?
This is I'm happy to be a counterpoint to Fantastic Four because this film is very, very good.
Yeah.
I really liked it. It reminded me a little bit of Carol Morley's The Falling, which is another film which really captures... I mean, I haven't been a teenage girl for some time, if ever, but it really captures, I think, a lot of things that other... And few films do about that sort of period of... There are a lot of films about coming-of-age teenage boys, but there probably aren't really enough about the girl side of the equation. And here's one with Belle Powley, who, as you say, she stole the show in A Royal Night Out. She's really good in that. She's very, very good in this as a 15-year-old San Francisco teenager set in the 70s. Lots of great period detail. And she's really talented. Her American accent is flawless. Mm-hmm. Her mum, Kristen Wiig, not seeing any colonial ladies on any wings in this one. She's quite serious. It's quite a straight turn from her, and she can do that very, very well. And they have almost a sisterly dynamic, the two of them. She gives her this advice, you need to go out, put yourself out there before it's too late. So she's 15 years old. I mean, you know, she's got this life in her yet. She needs to put herself out there, put a bit of makeup on. And she's sort of, Kristen Wiig's character, Charlotte, the mum, kind of welcomes her into this 70s, quite kind of licentious, slightly druggy world. And through that, she meets Alexander Skarsgård, who's 35, thoughtful, nice, very, very weak-minded sort of character.
Yeah.
An interesting character. You see the good and the bad in him, and they fall into this, obviously, age completely inappropriate relationship. And also this kind of weird love triangle forms as well. That's not really the essence of the film. The essence of the film is the world through this girl's eyes. It's a little 400 blowsy in that sense, and very, very good, based on a kind of illustrated novel, not a really graphic novel, but and some of the illustrations come through on screen. There's that American splendification where you see the cartoons coming to life. And the director's definitely worth name-checking, Marielle Heller. I think does a lovely job with this, gets a really good performance out of all three of her leads, Belle Powley especially. She's very precocious is a terrible word, but she's very sort of thoughtful about her her place in the world and her sort of sexual journey, as it were, is the core of the film. But it's very funny in parts. It's also very sad, and it captures a moment in time in this girl's life and in society as well. We gave it 4 stars and a glowing recommendation. One postscript to that is that this it's been given an 18 in this country, so the equivalent of an NC-17. I think it's an R in America. And that's harsh.
Yeah.
It does also mean that if you are a teenage girl, you're going to struggle to go and see it at the cinema, which I think is a shame. It's honest and frank. It's not doing these things for the kicks. It's showing you things because they're important to this girl's development and her life. I can see why it's got an 18, the letter of the law. It certainly does things that warrant an 18, but it's a real shame that people can't see it below the age of 18. I think it deserves that audience, but it deserves an audience of all ages because there's something in it, I think, for everyone. 4 stars.
I would 100% agree with that. I think it's, it's kind of, she's not quite a role model in the sense that, you know, some of her behavior, as she realizes herself through the film, is not good and not neither going to make her happy nor, you know, generally a good idea. But at the same time, she's such a vibrant personality and such a big personality. And she becomes, she has such kind of fearlessness about pursuing her own desires that she is sort of a really inspiring figure in some strange way.
She is. I think vibrant's a really good word to describe her and the film.
Yeah.
It's a film that's full of life and it spills off the screen in a way that, you know, almost demands a second viewing. And
it's very funny, we should say.
And it's very funny. And it's very hard to capture this... this world, the 70s world of crazy wallpaper and the music, and not be a bit cliched and not be a bit, I've seen that before and it feels hackneyed. It isn't.
Yeah.
It feels quite real and authentic emotionally and physically.
Definitely. So that was a big recommendation for us. We gave that 4 stars.
On a side note, this is another total random side note. This reminds me of when the first season of Alex Mack, do you remember The Secret World of Alex Mack? That was given a 15 when it was released on DVD because there is a moment when she gets into a, hides in a tumble dryer. Bearing in mind this is a TV show in the 90s aimed at kids where she could turn herself into a puddle of moving gloop. So then she hid in a tumble dryer and that got a 15 and they couldn't edit it out because you cannot be shown to offer as a place that you could go play hide and seek in a tumble dryer. So yeah, it's just the letter of the law thing. Like if there is an incident or a moment that means it's that, then you just have to, that's what the BBFC's for. But yeah, it sounds like it's a bit of a shame that it's got the 18 though.
Yeah, definitely. I just want finally to talk about one last film this week. It's a Spanish drama called Marshland, which is a sort of a little bit of a Spanish True Detective, I guess. So this is set in 1980 in Andalusia, and two detectives, Juan and Pedro, are sent in to investigate a disappearance of two sisters. And what they find there is essentially a serial killer. So they're kind of investigating that. What makes this different from just the usual police procedural, although it's a very good one of those, is the fact that it's all taking place against the background of Spain's emergence from fascism under Franco. So you've got the kind of the last vestiges of that kind of political system holding on. That kind of political angle complicates the case in ways that I won't get into too much. But you do have the kind of the macro story and the micro story of this immediate disappearance kind of blending in a really, really clever way. This has swept the Goyas, the Spanish Oscars, and it kind of deserved to. It's a really very, very good film.
I was going to say that it's interesting political context, a little bit like the really terrific, I think, Oscar-winning The Secret in Their Eyes.
Yes.
Set against the scars of the past. It's always a really interesting place to set a thriller. And like that film, I think it's getting the American remake.
Yes.
It'll do well to be as stylish and elegant as this particular film.
Yeah, absolutely. The nighttime car chase especially is really impressive. So yeah, if you get the chance, if that's on anywhere near you, I would heavily recommend it. That got another 4 stars from us. So it's quite a good week outside of the big blockbuster release, at least. So that is it for this week's Empire Podcast. Join us next week for more film related fun when Chris will be back, I believe, and we will also be joined by the people behind Trainwreck, which I assume is a film about the Empire Podcast.
Uh-huh.
I believe that LeBron James is playing me, which is a bold casting choice, but one I feel sure will work.
Wow, I'll have to let down Ronda Rousey.
Until then, it's goodbye from Phil.
Goodbye.
It's goodbye from Ali.
Goodbye.
And it's goodbye from me. I'm off to break into East Berlin in the hope that Henry Cavill will come and rescue me.